Okay, good morning, everybody. 8 o'clock, Tuesday, September 1st, Chem 30A. And this is just sort of our first introductory meeting and getting to say hello and talk about the course a little bit, expectations, what you guys can expect out of the course, what you can expect out of me and my teaching style and my plan for the semester. That's the whole thing for today. So let me go ahead and start off with sort of what the class looks like. You've got two instructors. You've got Krista, and Krista is the instructor of record for the course. So Krista is going to be teaching, and she's going to be teaching entirely asynchronously, I believe. So all of her materials, the entire semester, is already online in Canvas. So when you look at that Canvas shell, it has everything in there, and all of her lectures are already programmed in there. And then she has regular due dates and a schedule that is set up for all of the exercises, the labs, the homework. Everything is set up within that Canvas shell. Good morning, Caitlin. We're just talking about the setup of the class and expectations for this semester. So we're not gonna be doing any real work today unless you guys want me to, in which case I'm perfectly happy to go over any of the material that Krista is starting with. So we could do that as well. But so Krista's got the Canvas shell all programmed out, and my job was really to come in and to be a lab instructor and to teach the lab curriculum. Now, Krista also has her own labs. And so within the Canvas shells, what she has done is she has taken her class, which is entirely programmed in, and she has propagated it to our Canvas shell, which means that when you look at it, all of the lab instruction is in there for Krista as well. And so you have everything you need in that Canvas shell, which makes me feel like I'm just kind of like on for the ride here. But that's not generally the way that I like to teach. I like to teach more in person, and I like the face-to-face interaction. And so I have, for all of my classes, I have constructed them to be synchronous in nature, in instruction, meaning that I'm gonna do live lectures for every one of my lectures and office hours and labs and all of that. And then I'll also make those all available and posted online so that anybody who is asynchronous can follow along and do it in that format. But what that means too is that I generally, for my classes, don't populate out entirely my Canvas shell. It sort of grows as the class grows because I keep populating it with each new assignment that we're going to do rather than having it all programmed out. So it's a little bit different in the way that Krista and I go that direction. However, Krista and I teach very similarly in that we're very student oriented. We're both very approachable. We're both very cognizant of the workload that we put on students. And I think that we're also both very accommodating in terms of understanding when things come up as life tends to, that we can adjust and work with that and with you guys and make sure that we're there for you. So I think in that, Krista and I are very similar. So all my plan is to have all of the lectures at 8 a.m. to 9:20 Tuesday, Thursday, the way that we regularly would, and to introduce that material and to give you time to be able to work on that material and to do it dynamically. And rather than just having a monologue, I like to have a dialogue. I like to have you guys ask questions and to answer those questions and address those questions and allow those questions to sort of guide the presentation that I do. So particularly, and I do this a lot, I tend to teach a lot of labs as a TA with another instructor teaching the lecture. That happens because my main teaching duty is Chem 12, which is the organic chemistry. And for that, I teach the lectures and the labs. But that means that the units that I get for that don't cover all the units that I'm supposed to. And so they usually slot me in Chem 30A labs and Chem 3 labs, teaching alongside other instructors. And I love teaching the lab component. Lab is one of my favorite things to teach. And so, so I'm used to coming in and asking the students what they need from me, because as they're going through lecture, different lecturers will have different focuses and different areas that they put emphasis on. And students going through those lectures have have different misunderstandings or confusions. And my job then, I feel like, is oftentimes to come in and help to try to clear up some of that confusion. And so I allow the lecture to be very dynamic, and whatever it is you guys need, we treat it sort of as a lecture office hours combination. I have my agenda where I want to be able to give you the skills that are associated with the lab so that you can do the lab, but then whatever else we can backfill at the same time, that's what I like to do. So I think of it as a very dynamic sort of interaction and dynamic lecture that fits in and fills all the holes that you guys have or blanks that you guys have. So that's sort of the goal. But that means you got to show up here at 8 o'clock. Otherwise, I'm just going to be talking to the camera and doing the same thing that everybody else is doing and filling in a thought out lecture. And that's not what I'm best at. I mean, I could do that, but that's not what I'm best at. Along with Canvas, what I'll show you guys is I tend to also keep my own website. And I got a screen share from my iPad. Okay, so now you should be able to see my iPad coming up. And I'm going to go to Safari. And in Safari, what I'll do is I'll type in chemed.study, C-H-E-M-E-D, chemed.study. And that is a website that I maintain that is my personal website. And it is, at this point, unassociated with Cabrillo, so it doesn't live at Cabrillo anymore. And here what I have is, this is sort of like what I have always done instead of Canvas. Now, I'll program all this into Canvas too so that you guys can access it. But this is sometimes a little bit easier and more concise and all in one place so that you have an easier time finding things. And my contact information is all there. My office hours are there, currently teaching in my schedule for next semester. And then on the right-hand side, I have all the courses that I teach. And you'll see that there's a Chem 30A course in there as well. And I need to update this a little bit because the syllabus and the schedule are not correct. And this is for when I usually teach the course entirely myself. So I have my own homework schedules and things. I think I will take those off for right now so there's no confusion with Krista's section. But in here, what you can find is you can find the laboratory manual, and I will set the schedule to align it with Krista's. And each day that we have lab, for instance, the first lab that we'll be doing is math and the calculator. There's links there for each one of the labs that allow you to download the labs and for each day that we'll be working on. And you can either complete them electronically. Some people have the ability or programs to be able to write directly onto these, or you can print them out and you can work on them on paper and then take screenshots from your cell phone. And then I'll show you some ways that you can convert those screenshots into PDFs that you can then upload as a single PDF online. And that makes it a little bit easier for Krista and I to grade things, that submitting a PDF as opposed to submitting 10 different photographs of an assignment makes it a whole lot easier for us to grade. And then all those submissions will just be done in Canvas. Each one of the Canvas assignments that Krista has created has a submit button in the upper right-hand corner. You go to that, that allows you to upload your documents, and then Krista and I can grade them. I'll be grading all of the lab assignments. Krista will be grading all of the lecture assignments. So Krista will be grading your exams, your quizzes, your homework, and I'll be taking care of all of the lab assignments that we have. So for many of the labs, they will be worksheet type labs like this one. Those are labs that we traditionally do anyway within Chem 30A. There's two sort of parts to the curriculum. Chemistry at this level, at the Chem 30A level, is a lot of introductory material where we're trying to, let me talk about chemistry to begin with. most people think that they're signing up for a chemistry and a science class, which is true. You're signing up for chemistry and a science class, but you've also signed up for a foreign language class and you've signed up for a math class because that's what chemistry entails. Chemistry is like learning a foreign language. We have our own vocabulary and it's a symbolic language, a lot like Mandarin. So it's not even a symbolic language or a foreign language like French or Spanish or German. It's a foreign language like Mandarin that has a symbolic language where each word is denoted by symbols. And so we have all of our atomic symbols and the way that we write equations and the way that we write formulas, and it's all done symbolically. And so that means that you need to learn and understand that symbolic language. We also use a tremendous amount of math. And so it's very similar to taking a math course in learning how we do certain types of mathematical problems, things that we call stoichiometry within chemistry. That's the fancy word that we use that means taking and calculating mass to mole conversions, ways of counting elements and counting molecules. And so you put those two things together and it makes this class a challenging class. That's why chemistry tends to be so challenging. That and the fact that you can't see most of the things that we're looking at trying to learn. They're too small. They're not even microscopic. They're smaller than microscopic. They're so small that you can't use a microscope to actually visualize them. And so all we can do is show you pictures of our best guess of what we think that they look like based on all of the experiments that we've done. And so you put all of that together and it makes it challenging. And so some of the best ways that we can teach it is giving you a workload that supports the memorization and the patterning process of learning how to do all those skills. And that means doing a bunch of worksheets that help to cement those cognitive pathways that we're looking for you to build. And then we couple that with a bunch of experiments as well. And the experiments also back up those cognitive pathways that we're trying to build. And so I would say that it's probably about 50-50 sort of worksheet mode versus lab mode. That's in the regular semester. And then when we go online, now it's very hard to even do those lab modes. And so what Krista and I tried to do is we tried to do our best to explain the lab that we would do. And in some cases, I've even programmed into Canvas actual labs where you go in and you take the measurements by observing the photograph that is there or the drawing that is there. I tend to use drawings more than I use photographs. I tend to fall back on my drawing ability. And so many of the labs, I think that we can give you a feel and an understanding of what it would be to actually doing that lab. And taking data that is your own data, and then trying to go through and complete the lab from that data, I can maybe even show some examples of what I mean, what that might look like. So all of that stuff, the lab manual, like I said, will be programmed in so that you'll be able to just click on the PDFs. Like the second lab that we'll do is dimensional analysis, and the PDF for that will be available. And for each one of these labs, the instructions are included in the front of the lab. Almost all the information that you need to do the lab is in the introduction and in the instructions for the lab. That being said, I tend to not rely on those. I tend to give you everything you need within the lab instruction. So when you come into lab, and we sit down for this hour and 20 minutes twice a week, the first half an hour of that will be me giving instruction and showing examples of how we do things, why we do things. I like to explain why we do things as much as I like to explain how we do things, to give you context and understanding of why it is that we're learning something. That's an important part for me is that. And then we go through and often work on the component together so that as you're working on it, I'm also available here for you to be able to ask questions until we sort of submit the pathways. We usually get about 50% through the assignment. enough for you to feel comfortable, and then you can finish the assignment on your own at that part once the class is done. When we come back to class the next day, when it's a Tuesday and a Thursday, when we come back on a Thursday, the first thing that I generally do is open it up for questions on the last assignment so that you can fill in any holes or anything that you had problems with, because oftentimes the exercises are a set of progressions and get more difficult towards the end. And so people oftentimes feel comfortable as they're starting. They feel comfortable asking a few questions. They feel like they've got it. They go on their way, and all of a sudden you hit the last few exercises and you go, wait a minute, this is not what I expected. And so that allows us then to fill in some of those holes as well, to so that you're getting everything that you need. So that's sort of the teaching philosophy. So I will probably get this fleshed out and have everything here that you need by Thursday. Krista's schedule doesn't actually have us starting the lab until next week. So when I look at the schedule that she's programmed in, all this week she sort of has meet and greets scheduled in place. She has introductions to the lab, but not actually starting the lab, for later in the week. And then next week she has us on Tuesday doing that first lab, which is the math and the calculator lab. And so I'm going to honor Krista's schedule. And this Thursday, if we want, we can do some introduction to this so that we get a little bit ahead. But for the most part, we'll honor Krista's schedule and we'll follow along with that plan. Okay. Any sort of questions yet? And that's the other thing, is feel free to interrupt me, break in at any time. Anytime you guys have a question.
I did have a question. Are these all going to be on the link on the modules? So that's where we can find them?
Krista also has them all linked on the modules. The only thing that I'll say about Krista's modules and my links is that we have a little bit difference. And maybe I can go in and I can fix Krista's links. We'll see. So Krista, whichever lab she had, I'll show you an example. Let me go to Krista's module. And ours is the 30A-1. And on the modules, in the first matter and measurement module, she has her lectures there, and then she has assignment lab activity 1, math and the calculator. And within that module, she has the activity down at the bottom of the screen, lab number 1, math and the calculator, so that you can download that. And it comes up and it looks almost exactly like mine, except for some little, let me see where I saw it. This one's actually, there we go. This math problem, 3.4, and then it's got a double arrow, 10, negative 4, exponent negative 4, g, and then it's got a double arrow in the bottom. That double arrow is actually supposed to be a time symbol, and it's supposed to be a multiplication symbol, and there's a couple of different areas in this where, for whatever reason, it didn't print right, and it just has a couple of little errors as you go through. And I think even in the activity where you're supposed to, it looks pretty good through here. So there's just some little formatting things. And on mine, the formatting is fixed. And I've gone through and made sure that all of those symbols are displaying correctly. And so what I'll try to do is work with Krista to go through and swap out those ones on the Canvas shelf so that they're identical to mine, so that all the formatting is fixed. And so you'll be able to get them from either place. You can get them just all in the Canvas shell. The only thing that that might be different between Krista and I is that I tend to, along with going through and correcting and putting corrections and annotations and showing you how to do things the right way, I tend to also publish the answer key after I've done everything. But those answer keys, I tend to put all up on this website. So under additional resources, you'll find a number of answer keys after we've gone through and done the assignment. So the answer key is not available at this time. The answer key is not available before you do it. But then once the assignment is done, everybody's turned it in, everybody's graded it, then I put the answer key up to just give you more study options so that you can go through and go back over those exercises and look and see. And it's not just an answer key where the answer is there. It's an answer key where everything is worked out. So you can see the full sort of annotated way of answering something.
Okay.
So those probably won't show up in Canvas. I'll probably just maintain those on my own website, but you know where to go find them. Mm-hmm. So those are available. Any sort of other questions? I know we've got a couple of other people in here. No, you guys are gonna be quiet this morning. That's okay too, it's early, I understand. Okay, so let me think what else I can show you. We'll talk about teaching styles. So maybe introducing myself a little bit more. I've been with Cabrillo almost as long as Krista. Krista started in 2000, I started in 2001. So Krista's been there 20 years, I've been there 19 years. And I've been a full-time instructor at Cabrillo for 19 years. I've been department chair twice for 7 years. But it feels like I've been at Cabrillo a lot longer than that because I started my education at Cabrillo. I was a student at Cabrillo. So I came through Cabrillo and I took all of my chemistry classes at Cabrillo. And so I feel like I've been at Cabrillo closer to 30 years than 20 years. And as a student, I worked in the chemical stockroom and I had keys to the building and I had the run of the place. And I actually sort of had my own office at Cabrillo where I worked with the organic chemistry instructor and did computational chemistry. I made animations that supported his teaching. And so he would use those animations in his classes to be able to teach the chemistry concepts. And then I transferred from Cabrillo and went to UCSC and finished my undergraduate at UCSC. And I found a mentor at UCSC that I really liked working with. And I stayed on at UCSC and did my PhD at UCSC. And then in the middle of my PhD program, that professor that I had worked with at Cabrillo contacted me and said that they had an emergency hire situation. They had a class that they were trying to teach over the summer. And it was the class that comes after this one. It was Chem 30B. And they couldn't find an instructor to teach that Chem 30B class. And so they called me and asked me if I would be willing to teach that 30B class over the summer. And I said, yes. So I did that. And then I was in my last year of my PhD and they had a full-time faculty hire that year. And the instructor that I had worked with, his name was Harry Unger. Harry said to me, Jason, he said, you're almost done with your PhD. You're going to need a job. And there's no better way of getting a job than getting practice at doing job interviews. And we've got this full-time hire and you should do this just as a practice. You should come and do this full-time hire. And I said, okay, that sounds good. And so I did the interview as a practice interview, just to sort of get practice in going through and doing interviews. And at the end of the interview, they offered me the job. And so I had to make a decision and I took the job. And I finished my PhD. I finished writing my dissertation and I taught my first year all at the same time. It was like the worst year I'd ever had in terms of workload and trying to do everything at once. But it was one of the best decisions that I've ever made because I knew that I love teaching. I knew that I love being at Cabrillo and having that opportunity to start out and to just get a full-time position out of the gate was amazing. And it has just been a fantastic experience. And at Cabrillo, I have traditionally taught in two different areas. I started teaching at Chem 3. Chem 3 is very similar to Chem 30A. It is the first chemistry class that students take. It's generally considered to be equivalent to high school chemistry. And it's the first time that we introduce students to chemistry and this intangible world that we're surrounded by. I mean, everything that you can feel, everything that you can see, touch, taste, smell, all of it is chemistry. And yet most of us have no idea what the world around us is really like or made up of. And so opening people's eyes to that experience for the first time, I find immensely satisfying. It is just so much fun to teach that beginning entry class. And Chem 30A is exactly the same way. The only difference between 30A and Chem 3 is that most of the people in 30A are going towards health occupations, whereas in Chem 3, they're generally going to what we call the majors track. They're going into Chem 1A and Chem 1B and Chem 12, and they're going into some STEM area. And Chem 30A, we're going into a STEM area, but with a health slant towards it. And so the difference in the student populations tend to be that Chem 3 students are a little bit more excited to learn chemistry. They're there, they wanna be there. Chem 30A students typically are a little bit more apprehensive. They come in with a little bit more fear, a little bit more anxiety, and feel that this is a hurdle that they need to get over, as opposed to something that they're really excited about doing. And so the teaching is oriented a little bit more towards the biological side. So many of the examples and things that we talk about in Chem 30A tends to be more towards the biological side. And we also come into it with a greater understanding of that student population and the apprehension and the fear that can be there, and adjust our teaching accordingly, so that we try to take some of that apprehension and fear away from it and try to give you some of that excitement, or share some of that excitement that we feel within that class. And then the other class that I teach is Chem 12, which is organic chemistry. And so the progression goes Chem 3, Chem 1A, Chem 1B, and then two semesters of Chem 12. And so it's a year and a half, basically, of curriculum of chemistry after this class, sort of in its progression. And it's about the chemistry of life. It is in Chem 30A and Chem 3, we focus on all of the elements on the periodic table, all 118 elements. And then after we learn about all of those 118 elements, sort of in general, and chemistry in general, in organic chemistry, we focus on carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, a little bit of phosphorus, the halogens, which are bromine and chlorine and fluorine and iodine, and a few of the metals, and that's it. And we do an entire year on the chemistry of just those elements. And in that class, the curriculum is throughout all of the Chem 1A, Chem 1B, Chem 3, Chem 30A, the curriculum is very well defined, and all of the things that we teach you have almost no exceptions. It's like we build these boxes, and all of the things that we teach you fit nicely within the boxes. And so you know exactly what to do. It's like if you're going to do a mathematical problem, you put an answer in, you crank the handle, an answer comes out, and there's a process to getting that answer, and you know exactly what to do. Within organic chemistry, we break all the boxes. The boxes no longer exist. For everything that I teach you that looks like it fits within a box, I can show you all these examples that go outside the box. And so it takes all the blinders off, and we explode all of the preconceived ideas and open your mind to new possibilities. And there are no more mathematical answers. Within organic chemistry, there's very little math. It is all about reactivity and how elements react with one another, and understanding them more as family members with personalities, or friends with personalities. And so carbon has a certain personality and a certain type. Carbon is very reliable, very consistent. Boron is schizophrenic. Boron just can't make up its mind what it wants to do. And so boron sometimes wants to do one thing and sometimes wants to do another thing. And learning about its schizophrenic nature is part of the fun. And then we start to learn them as families as well. So when we learn about carbon, we also learn about those elements that are next to it in the periodic table. Silicon, for instance, is very similar to carbon, a little bit different, a little bit larger, a little bit more electron donating than withdrawing. Boron and aluminum are very similar. Aluminum is schizophrenic like boron is. And so we start talking about them, and I anthropomorphize them a little bit more and give them personalities. And I'll do that a little bit within Chem 30A as well, you'll see, because it's just part of my teaching style. that I talk about them as my best friends more than I talk about them as elements, and giving you a sense of what their personalities are like. So at the Chem30A level, it's cheerleading and teaching with understanding. And at the Chem12 level, it's taking the blinders off and blowing the preconceived ideas and introducing them to a new way of thinking. And so I guess you could say that my teaching is really about teaching new ways of thinking. And sometimes I'll say this too, oftentimes I'll say it within Chem3, that a lot of my teaching has to do with teaching you new ways of thinking and new ways of problem solving, new ways of looking at the world. And that chemistry, while I'm incredibly excited about it, is a venue for me to teach new ways of thinking and opening your mind to new possibilities more than it is a way of teaching chemistry. It's just this venue for me to be able to go in and show you ways of problem solving that help you within any class, no matter what class it is. So it can help you within math, it can help you within chemistry, it can help you within biology, it can help you with political science. It's just a way of looking at how many options do I have and how do I assess those options. It's a way of looking at and doing critical thinking. So that's pretty much my teaching style. And my background. So I like to teach as a dialogue. I like to have a lot of questions. I like to know what it is you guys need. And in that, I tend to not have a set or formalized plan. When I come into class, particularly within Chem 38 and Chem 3, I oftentimes walk in and I know what lab I'm supposed to do, but I have no idea what I'm going to teach or where I'm going to start. And I ask everybody, what have you done in lecture? What have you talked about? Where do we need to start? I get that information from the students. I do a quick reassessment for like 5 seconds in my brain, and then I start off. And I don't use any sort of PowerPoint. I don't have any pre-done slides. Everything that I do is me writing on a whiteboard. So then how do I do that in terms of you guys? Well, that has to do with this app called Notability. And within Notability, interesting. How do I get rid of that? Skip. Within Notability, what I'll do is I'll just start off with a new note and me drawing. And so everything that I tend to explain tends to be me going through and drawing. And so, for example, one of the things that we're going to talk about that Krista has on the agenda is the first thing is math and the calculator. And when you go through her first couple of lectures, the things, the places that she starts with are looking at numbers and how we talk about numbers and why we talk about numbers. And so one of the first things that we need to do is agree on how we're going to talk about numbers. And why we agree, why we have to agree on how we're going to talk about numbers. So I could start it from many different standpoints. One of the things, let me see where I've got some images. Sometimes what I'll come in with is pre-done drawings. That's not what I want. I'm going back to try to find one of my Chem 3 lectures from over this summer. What I'm looking for is this guy. So now we can go back to that new note that I was doing. Okay. So when we start to do measurement, the way that we take measurements, the way that we understand what a measurement means, if I were to give you a ruler and ask you to measure a piece of paper, you would probably align the ruler to the piece of paper, and then you would read off a measurement. And you may or may not read that measurement correctly because you understand how to use a ruler. We've all used rulers. We've all used rulers in high school and in grade school. Some of us have used rulers in measuring a wall to hang a painting or to do certain things. And as long as we get close, the ruler does what we want it to do. However, within chemistry, there's not one ruler. We're used to one ruler. We're used to a ruler that has inches and feet on it. And that's what we've all sort of used. And those rulers that have inches and feet are generally marked out in sixteenths. So every demarcation on the ruler is a sixteenth of an inch. And so there are 16 divisions between the one and the two on the ruler. But in chemistry, we tend not to use inches. We tend to use meters and centimeters. And oftentimes the markings on a ruler will change, that we have different rulers to use for different jobs. And sometimes the ruler has very few markings, and sometimes the ruler has a lot of markings. And so how do we actually go through and read a ruler? And so what you can see here is that I have a key that is set up against three different rulers, and each of the rulers has a different number of markings on it. So the first ruler is marked out in ones only. It goes 1, 2, and 3. The second ruler is marked out in tenths, meaning that there are 10 divisions between the 1 and the 2. And the third ruler, the markings are really, really tiny. I've made them super small. And there are actually 100 different markings between the 1 and the 2. And so the first ruler is marked out in ones, the second in tenths, and the third in hundredths. And if I want to measure the size of the key, when I look at the size of the key falls between 2 and 3. But where does it fall between 2 and 3? It falls a little bit closer to the 2 than it does to the 3. What scientists agree on is that when we read a measurement, the way that we read a measurement is we read all of the known markings, and then we estimate the last one, and we call it an estimated digit. And so reading between the 2 and the 3, I would estimate that that line is falling at about 0.2. Somebody might look at that and say, that looks a little bit closer to 0.3, or maybe it looks a little bit closer to 0.1. All of those are acceptable measurements on that ruler. And so what we say is that on that ruler, it is 2.2 centimeters estimated to tenths, and that it is plus or minus 0.1 centimeters in that estimated position. And so that measurement can be read or is understood to be as small as 2.1. So I can see this as being 2.1 centimeters and as big as 2.3 centimeters. And that's what we mean by that plus or minus, is that it falls within that range. If I change rulers and I go to a ruler that has more markings on it, then the way that I estimate is done exactly the same, but now I estimate between those smaller markings. So when I go to the next ruler, what I see is that the measurement falls, this is 2.1, 2.2, and that is 2.3. It's falling in between the 2.2 and the 2.3. And so I have to estimate where it falls, and that looks like it's right smack in the middle. It's falling at about the 5. So what I do is I write down all of the known digits, 2.2, and then I estimate the 5. And that means that this has what we call uncertainty in the last digit. And the uncertainty is always said to be plus or minus 1 in the last digit. So it is 2.25 plus or minus 0.01, meaning that this measurement can be as small as 2.24, but as large as 2.26. And so the uncertainty is smaller. There's less uncertainty because I'm using a better measuring device. If I go to an even better one, and this one's even harder to see, now I need to get a magnifying glass, which is what I've done here, and I've blown it up on a magnifying glass. This is, This is the 2, 2.1, 2.2. That would be 2.3. This is 2.21, 2.22, 2.23, 2.24, and I'm falling right on the 2.25 mark. And so I have to estimate that last digit beyond the 5. And I would estimate, because it's right on it, I'd estimate it that it's right on it at 0. And so the measurement that I would record would be 2.250, estimating that last digit. And so what the number actually tells us is it tells us how good the ruler was. It tells us how many markings there were on the ruler and how much uncertainty there is in the measurement. So numbers don't just communicate how big or how small something is. They also communicate how good the ruler was that was used to make the measurement. And that's part of how scientists agree that we always use rulers. And so when a measurement is taken, a scientist, or now you, can look at that number and you can tell how good the ruler was that was used to make that measurement. That uncertainty within a measurement translates into calculations that we might do as well. And so one of the things that we do is, for instance, if we were to look at doing a calculation, for instance, we want to measure the area of a box. The area of a box is determined by length times width. And so if I know the length of a box, and let's say that this equals 2.2 meters, and we'll do everything in meters, and the height of the box, or the width of the box, and let's say that this width was measured with a different ruler, so that the measure of this width was 1.95 meters, then the area is equal to the length times the width. But if we take the length and the width and we multiply them together, the area is going to equal 2.2 meters times 1.95 meters. And I grab a calculator and I take 2.2 times 1.95. The calculator spits out 4.29. And this becomes now meters squared. And the question is, how well do I actually know that area? The uncertainty in each one of these measurements, let's do it this way. The uncertainty in this measurement is in the tenths place. The uncertainty in this measurement is in the last digit, is in the hundredths place. So in other words, the measurement at the of length at the top could be as big, let's do it this way. That length could be as small as 2.1 or as big as 2.3. And that is what we call the uncertainty in that measurement, meaning that that uncertainty extends and covers all of this area right here. And the width also has an uncertainty to it. So the uncertainty in that width is in the hundredths position. So when I look at the width and how big the width actually is of that box, and I'll do that here. So this has a width, which is, let's do it in a different color. Let's choose blue for this one. The width has a smaller amount of uncertainty. It can be as big as 1.96 or as small as 1.94. And that's the uncertainty that's in the width. So that uncertainty is a small amount that looks like this. And so the uncertainty in the area is reflected in this amount of area and this amount of area. And the question is, does this number reflect that uncertainty in that measurement? And the answer is that it's actually smaller, that this is too small and does not reflect the proper uncertainty in the box. And so what we need to do is we need to come up with a way, a system of actually looking at this number and making this number reflect the uncertainty that is shown in these two measurements that goes into it, so that we can properly relate the uncertainty in the area of the box overall. And that system is called significant figures. And it's a whole system of how scientists agree that we treat numbers within calculations. And that's part of what we go through and we do when we get into the dimensional analysis lab. And so all of my teaching tends to be more from just working on examples and drawing them and showing you in real time, as opposed to predefined sort of notes. That's just a difference in my teaching style. So I've always found that if I were to teach with PowerPoint, number one, I can't change it. So it's like set in stone. And when people ask questions, it doesn't give me the ability to be able to move and to change track as I need to. The other thing is that when I go with PowerPoint, especially when I get excited, I can go fast. And I can go fast on a whiteboard when I'm just drawing. If I had PowerPoint, I could go really fast. And that would just be overwhelming. And so to tone down my enthusiasm and to tone down my ability to go super fast, I have always just worked on a whiteboard with pencil and whiteboard markers. So that's a little bit about my teaching style. So that's what you can expect. And hopefully that aligns well with your learning styles as well. And I think that you'll find that no matter how many times you ask the question, I can find that many different ways to explain it. And we'll constantly seek to find the way that your brain works and to explain it in a way that your brain will accept and make tangible. And yeah. So I think that's what we're in for this semester. Hopefully that gives you a little bit of a flavor and understanding of the way that I teach and do things. So any sort of questions or anything? I've been talking for a little bit now. I think it'd be good to sort of cut it here, give you guys a break if you plan on joining Krista at 9:30. And I'm gonna slip into that conversation with Krista as well. I have office hours that start at 10 o'clock. And so I'll ditch out for my office hours to make sure that I'm meeting with my Chem 12 students. But I'll show up there for a little bit and introduce myself to I'm assuming that more people will join us at 9:30 as opposed to joining us at 8 o'clock in the morning. But I encourage you all to attend at 8 to be here to be able to ask your questions so that I can address them directly and treat it like office hours in that way. And I think that we might have a smaller group. We'll see. I think that when more people figure out how I teach and the value of actually being here, I think that we'll see that more people will show up at 8 o'clock. Or at least I hope they will, but maybe not. To each their own. Okay, any sort of questions or anything come up or any sort of anxiety or concerns about the semester or where you can find things or how you're gonna connect and contact me? Or anything like that.
For your office hours, are they only in the morning?
No, let me go back to my office hours for you real quick. And I'll put them on Canvas too. Okay. But my office hours for this semester are scheduled for Monday, Wednesday, 1:30 to 2:30. Okay. And for Tuesday, Thursday, 10 to 11.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, if people have commitments at that time and we need to find something outside that, just email me. And and I'm more than happy to make an appointment, schedule a time to work with you. And if I need to move these times around a little bit, I can always adjust these times as well.
Okay.
Okay. So I want to make sure that those times are going to meet. Excuse me for one second. I need to grab. allergies are kicking in there. Okay. I need to make sure that that these times are going to work for the majority of people. And so this is where I had holes in my schedule that was working, but I'm certainly willing to adjust and accommodate the class, particularly the Chem 30A class if we need to.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I'll put out links. So those will all be Zoom links, and I'll email out the class with those Zoom links as well. And I'll put them on Canvas so that you guys all have them there as well. Okay. Anything else? Caitlin, Caroline, Angelica, you guys are all quiet. Everybody's good? All right. Let me ask, have you guys used Zoom before? Do you know how to use Zoom pretty well? Do you know how to find, like, if I asked you guys to give me a thumbs up, to be able to go down into the reactions and find the thumbs up symbol? Oh, okay. Caitlin knows. All right, so at the bottom of your screen, if you're looking at Zoom, there's a little thing that says reactions. And if you click that reactions button, you get a bunch of symbols that you can use. You can applaud, you can give a thumbs up, an acknowledgement that, yes, I'm understanding, I'm paying attention, I'm here with you, so that when people have their cameras off, which is great, that's fine. I don't mind having cameras on or off as a personal choice. And I know that many people are learning in their personal spaces and it's awfully early. So having your camera off is perfectly fine. I like to see your face, do I recommend a separate notebook for lab? You know, for this class, generally, not necessary, and particularly in the format that we are doing, you can use your notebook from class. And because many of the assignments that we're turning in are going to be done on worksheets that have the answer spaces provided and places for you to do the work, it's not entirely necessary. I think that it's sometimes a good idea to be able to have a separate notebook, but nothing that is expensive or and no specific sort of thing, like a small composition book that would cost a couple of bucks might be a good idea to have to take some notes down in for lab. But other than that, you can just take the notes in whatever notebook you're already using for lecture. I think that would be just fine. Let me see if there's anything else I can tell you guys. I'm also fairly adept at watching the chat and getting questions in the chat. I've got two monitors up, and I notice as soon as something blinks on my other monitor, I catch it out of the corner of my eye. So throwing questions into the chat is always welcome. If you want to unmute your mic, one of the ways to do that easily, Emily's got a very quiet household, so I notice you haven't had a single peep or sound in your household, which is amazing. Most students have a lot going on in the background, so that's fine to have your microphone unmuted if you're in a quiet place. If you want to unmute temporarily and your microphone is muted, if you hit the space bar and hold down the space bar, you can try it. It will unmute your microphone for as long as you hold down the space bar. And if you want to break in and ask a question at any point, doesn't matter if I'm mid-sentence, go ahead and hit your space bar and interrupt me. If I haven't seen the question that you've thrown into the chat and you feel like I'm getting away from it because I've got my head down and I'm writing, go ahead and unmute your microphone and just throw out that question. And I typically just go by Jason. So you can say, hey, Jason, I had a question. And I will always welcome those questions and honor those questions. I may hold you off for a second. I said, that, you know what? That is perfect. That is exactly where I'm going. Hang on to that and let's see if I answer it in this next 30 seconds to a minute. But always, I always honor those questions. And so don't worry about interrupting me. You can refer to me as Jason. You can use Dr. Camera, Professor. I answer to all of those. My preferred is just to go by Jason. I've always just done that. I'm comfortable that way. So that's the relationship that I prefer, that I like to foster with my students. I tend to teach with a tremendous amount of trust. And I like it that way. So, all right, I'm going to cut it there. Unless there's any other questions, I propose that we adjourn and that we can pick it up again on Thursday, 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll be here, and we'll find something to talk about, whether it's introducing some of these new topics, filling in some gaps in what Krista is presenting, or getting more people to join us, and a little bit more of reintroduction. We'll find a way forward. And then on Tuesday of next week, we'll start our first lab and we'll do our first exercise. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's the plan for the semester. Excited to meet you guys. Okay, so let's cut it there. And I'll see you at 9:20 if you join Krista at that point. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.